right? So, let's get into Get Out, and I'm reading from my phone because I took the notes. Number one, at the beginning of the movie Get Out, notice the father. He was a passive, aggressive racist. What do we mean when we say passive?
All right,
aggressive
welcome.
Racist?
Hey,
a
this
passive,
is
aggressive racist.
The Q Lin
is just
Show.
Like any other
the Soul
passive,
Savages.
Aggressive personality. They are passive.
Q Lin.
Racism is benign. They go out of their way to act like they're not racist. And by
Q Lin?
Yeah, well,
wow. Okay. That
how
song.
You, Gordon, how you doing?
I'm doing great. The song Gordon Banks, Keep You in Mind. All right. We just played that. Hey, welcome to the Soul Savages Show with Q Lin Green. And welcome back, EB. Q Lin?
Yeah. To all the people listening and out there, we got a brand new co-host, EB. I know some of y'all been, they actually requested you back on, EB. And I was like, it'd be dope to have him on every week.
Oh wow!
But thank you for coming on. Thank you for coming on, co-hosting, and yeah, it should be fun. Yeah, we kicked Will off. Yeah, we got into it the other week.
Yep, EB, I got evicted from
on air. We had a big fight on air, and he had to go. It was just time.
I got
it
fired.
Was just time for Will to.
EB,
yeah.
How does that happen? You get fired off of a show on your own station. How does that happen, EB? I don't understand that.
That's like Craig and Friday. You got fired on your day off.
Hey,
love Will, man. I enjoy Will the whole time we've been co-hosting. He's always on board. Anytime I need some new music or anything, he's on it. Anything I needed to get done, he gets it done on the show. I just felt like it was to just put some pressure off him. I think it would just be dope to have a co-host to just go back and forth. That actually knows what I'm talking about. That doesn't confuse Kelly Price with Kelly Clarkson. You know, it'd be dope to have somebody that would, you know, understood what I was saying.
EB.
So thank you, EB.
EB, hey, come on, have my back there, brother. I got cut. You know, like, it's like you're on the starting five for the, you know, your favorite team, and all of a sudden you're benched. Okay, but that's okay. I'm looking forward to a great show. You guys have a great time.
Yes. I'm looking forward to it. EB, I was just going to read through some of the comics. I was trying to hurry up and pull it up before we got on. I didn't know the song was going to end so fast. He said a minute. He said it was 2 minutes left, but it felt like 20 seconds because, oh, my Jesus Christ. But it was somebody that asked, they saw the episode, you were on the Black Music Month segment, they had a question on, who is your favorite, female singer, like your all time?
Ooh, that's a hard one. I can never quite decide. I will say my favorite voice is Mary J. Blige.
Oh man, that's the one right there. That's the one.
Yeah.
You can't go wrong with Mary.
Yeah.
The one where I love the black eye, the black shades to cover the black eye, Mary. That's like the best era of music ever.
Yeah, with the real raspy voice.
Yes, all of that. The cover ups, the coke fights with Casey, all of that. I love that, Mary.
That's my
favorite. Isn't that weird? We talked about it on one show. Did you see where they were on the Mother's Day, the VH1 thing? That was like so random, but I was excited at the same time. It was like, why is this happening?
I was so excited. But then when he pointed at her, her mother's right there next to her, and her mother's like, you know, gave him the church hug. Like, I ain't forgot what you did to my baby 20 years ago, but. You know, the camera's on, so I'm gonna keep it cute.
He was like evangelist, deacon, pastor, all wrapped in one in that show. I was like, what is going on with KC? I was like, did somebody give him a hit backstage? Cause he is
somebody
acting like he is
something.
A preacher out here. And then he actually did, like, he's gonna bless, Mary's mother. I was like, what is he doing out here in these streets?
Yep, he grabbed Anthony Anderson mama's wig.
Oh, that's who it was. It wasn't
that's
Mary's
was.
Mama. I thought
it was Anthony Anderson's mother. And she
I was like, that was
terrifying.
So
like if her wig came off, she didn't have
right
the good wig cap on. She had the one with the holes in it.
Right, and then it was like, I was like, they got a new album. I was like, after that, little performance. I was like, since they reunited on stage, I was like, they're coming out with a new album. And it's called the Black and Blue Duets. That's what it's called.
That's it.
But I'm trying to find some more of these updates. They had a whole bunch of questions for you. But I think we have our guest on. She's an entertainment journalist. She's written for so many publications. I believe it's my guest on tonight. She's co-hosting. I think she's gonna be on with us the whole show. I just love people on from like social media that have interesting tweets and her post on Facebook and hers look interesting. So I believe it's Tiffany on, right? Tiffany Hamilton.
Correct.
Everybody, y'all give a good, if you're at home, y'all turn this up because I feel like I'm feeling real heathenish right now. That's how we do on this show. You know, we'll try to get the programming to be like respectable and, you know, more, you know, if you listen to the other shows on here, you'd be like, wow, like you bringing the quality of this show, like this network down. Cause I just talk about why back ladies at the grocery store and then it's like, they're like, oh, you're fine. I'm like, y'all talking about like Lupus Awareness Month and I'm talking about like Casey and his, eight ball, addiction and keeping the eight ball in his pocket. So yeah, we're going to start this off. I was going to ask, Tiffany some questions. I see you on there. You've been a journalist for 15 years. What was your first experience like? Actually, like getting into that, what made you want to do that?
To be honest with you, I've been like into like music and just hip hop journalism for a long time. Like it started with me with Word Up. You feel me? Like I was Word Up whenever I was younger, and from that graduated, you know, of course to the Source and just the hip hop culture overall. Just kind of really it swallowed me up. You know what I'm saying? Like I've been a fan of hip hop since. Back in the day, like I got in trouble in second grade for, you know, reciting hip hop lyrics as part of our assignment, you know, so it was inevitable.
Yeah. And I saw you posted, I think it was some article. It was about, I know Ebony was getting a whole lot of back. I've been hearing about this for years though, because I got a couple of writers that I know. And they've been talking about it, like, not on public social media, but they've been telling me behind the scenes and stuff. And it's like, yeah, man, they got a thing with not paying people, the writers and stuff. I never understood that, because I'm like, even with my website, like, it ain't, like, I got maybe, like, 4 to 5 people that help me run the site or whatever, but it ain't, like, significant like them that have, like, over, like, 25 or 50. You know, they deep in there, but it's like, I pay, like, even when I intern, I pay them. Like, they're not unpaid, so I understand how you have people, like, doing stuff for you and you don't pay them. So I wanted to know, like, have you had direct experience with that, or do you, what's your perspective on that, on people like Ebony? Not to call them out.
Look, we'll do it like
this. I'm just saying, I just want to know your perspective on it. I was just saying.
Tiffany, we're going to do it like this. If Ebony has...
It's public record, right.
If Ebony paid you, blink twice. How many times did you blink?
You said what happened?
How many times did you blink?
Look, I don't know.
She don't know. She went temporary. That's what they're gonna say. That's what she gonna say on the witness stand whenever they. What is it? They give you a disposition or something whenever Ebony when they get their people.
Yeah.
That's what she's going to say. She's like, I don't recall. This show is going to be evidence of it. But so she's not going to answer the questions when I was getting that.
No,
but
I mean, to be honest,
right.
To keep it real, though, for real, for real. Like, you know, that used to be a part of the game, and it still kind of is, which is why, because I've been stiff. You know, I ain't going to lie. I've been stiff by magazines and things like that throughout my career. But that's why New York and other cities like, you know, well, states like California are implementing those freelancer laws to where people, you know, there's a contract. The contracts that are in place have to be honored within a certain amount of time or else the person can sue. See, a lot of we didn't have that back in the day, but we was kind of like the trial and error, you know?
Right.
Right.
So I think that now it's a good step to get rectified, but are people still getting taken advantage of? Yeah.
Yeah. So you did seven. I read when you sent me your bio. You said that you done 7 years in publicity and PR, representing Keith Murray, EPMD, Camp Lowell. I've heard about Camp Lowell. I haven't listened to his music like that, but he's pretty popular. I've heard him around. I feel like a hip hop head. You know who that is, but yeah. I know who all those people are. You could have been on the, it made me think you could have been on the show we did, the Black Music Month, man. That show was crazy. Speaking of, and we'll still get it from them comments. just a side note. We were talking about the best MCs, and then I thought Royale was still on, and I asked him, and then Will jumped on, and he was like, well, you know that song by Will Smith, Just the Two of Us, like, that's a bad jam. And everybody was like, it was mostly Jay Wig, and shout out to him. He was like, what? It was like everybody simultaneously was like, what is going on? And then I was like, okay, let me transition before this gets heated.
So you're not going to let this go, are you? You're not going to let this go, are you, Q-Lib?
You're lucky I can't find the comments, because they thought that was funny. It was one girl that commented on the site that said you. That she almost peed on herself with Jay Wiggins. Like, what? Because it was funny. It was hilarious. Y'all gotta go back and listen to that show because it was funny.
Well,
but
good.
Anyway,
I'm glad you had fun with it.
Right. To get back to the you've done publicity with that. I love working with PR because that's what I do. You know, I contact mostly with them and then, you know, the whole teams or whatever, these artists. I love how some of them are so humble about, like, pitching. When they pitch me an artist, even if I don't really care for it, they appreciate me, like, saying whatever, whatever, and getting back to them in a timely fashion. Did you used to be like that, like, trying to contact certain people or whatever? Was that frustrating doing that, or did you enjoy doing the PR work?
I still do PR.
Right.
I do enjoy that a lot. Because I like the coordination and making sure that that positive information or that great MCs are getting pushed to the forefront. So that's one of the things I like doing. Like for me, to be honest with you, know some people, and that's no knock on nobody, but some people like doing certain things to get a check. But me, I'm very selective on what I'm doing because with PR, I know the connection I made over the years, and I have a lot of really good relationships, and so. When it comes to, like, even the people I work with, because people, they hit me up all the time, but I'm really selective on who I, you know, take on as a client, and I'm very selective on who I represent as well, because if I don't believe in what you got going on, then I can't fake it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like I said,
right.
It's on nobody, but I'm not trying to put out somebody that I feel is whack.
Right. And you do, I know currently you write for Shag Grip magazine, The Source. To be honest, I didn't even know The Source was still out there. Is it just digital, or do they still, like, print?
They do still have print mags. They're moving into the direction of digital, and but they're still going to continue their print, and then, of course, they're online.
Right. I see. I didn't even know that. I got to check that out. I know I keep up with some of you. I see your post on Facebook, and it was just one recently with the T.I. and Tiny story I clicked on earlier and looked at the story, and I was like, I love how you write on it, because I saw how you quoted it, and then when I looked at T.I.'s, I'm like, yeah, I'm glad I read yours first, because that nigga cannot, I was like, what is going on? For you to be using all these thesaurus words, you sure can't articulate well in message, because that was awful reading that. So I was like, what is going on? They got speaker spell, so what's going on? I mean, Rosetta Stone to translate this. Like, yeah, she my best friend and all this other stuff. It's just like whenever he talks, I think of Damon Wayne's character on In Living Color. He's like, we used to theologize and prophesize. I think of Damon Wayne's character every time he talks. I'm like, what? You using all these useless words. Like, get to the point, sir. Like, these are all these words to describe how trash you are as a husband. Okay.
it's too funny because a lot of my colleagues, especially the women, whenever they covered that letter, that's how they was. One of my homegirls wrote, T.I. tries to bounce back from his fuckboy status. I'm like, can we talk on that
right.
show while I'm
discussing? Oh, we all know how, yeah. They got an on and off thing going on. They probably ain't gonna never. They probably got a open situation going on. That's probably gonna be. Yeah, that's going to be forever for them. But, yeah, I guess we can, we did the updates because we got so much to talk about. And with the Savvy News, well, I shouldn't even be, this shouldn't even be Savvy News. This should be, like, Raggedy People News. But after we come back from this song, we're going to get to Raggedy People News.
All right. Hey, you listen to the Soul Savvy Show here with Q Lynn Green. And E.B. DJ the Chicago Kid, Turning Me Up. Man, that is too good. That is too good. Welcome back to the Soul Savvy Show with Q Lynn Green and EB and our special guest, Tiffany. Great show. Hey, Tiffany, I haven't introduced myself, but I'm Will, the CEO of Studio W The Buzz, and Q Lynn Green fired me. I just want the world to know that Q-Lan Green fired me.
You know what, Will? You know what? You know, it was just the decision that needed to be made. You know, you love the taste of honey whiskey, and you want to get your brown liquor in. And so I'm like, while we doing these topics and getting into these news topics, I'm like, let him get to his AA meetings when on the side of the show and do what he got and schedule those AA meetings. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And just chilling and cut.
You know, you guys were talking about this, you know, before, right? And EB and Tiffany, I just want you to know, Q-Lynn Green and I had some great shows, and see, now she's gotten big now, and so you know how we do sometimes when you get up to a certain plateau, you just forget.
Oh, you
don't
do me like that.
Right.
You don't do me like that, Will, really?
Yep.
You don't do me like that?
Yes.
But the best shows were the little faux pas you had. Everybody loved it, and they're still talking about it. Let me pull them up while you're talking about it, since you want to keep talking about it.
Yeah, I'm talking about it because I got fired.
Let's pull up these comments.
You know,
And I like
for Tiffany and also EB to comment on that. I mean, you get fired, right? You make one mistake and you get fired. I don't understand this.
Yeah.
With everything that we've been through together, I don't understand it. It doesn't make sense to me.
Let's see what the people had to say. It says, somebody put in quotation marks, so this was from Nasty Girl, No Miss Jackson. All right. It's in quotation, it says, put the cup down and pay attention. They quote me, and it says, laugh my butt off. I am out of all the camps because I cannot. Tell me there's more of this. And who else is on here? It says, I almost went to the bathroom. This is from Mind Your Business Enthusiast. Oh, I love that name. I'm stealing that. That's going to be my new bio and my Twitter. I'm taking that. Mind Your Business? That's my ministry there. I'm taking that. Mind Your Business Enthusiast says, I almost went to the bathroom myself whenever the host said Will Smith was his favorite rapper. And everyone said, what? And when he got the names wrong during the interview, when a couple from the podcast show, she introduced Marcus and Angel at the very start. What was he doing? And it says, laugh out loud. Oh, right, drinking, allegedly, in quotation marks, laugh out loud. I actually snorted whenever he kept getting the questions wrong. Angel said, what are you reading, boo? That is a real Kiki. That is hilarious. She said she actually snorted when you got the questions wrong. I didn't even hear that. Angel said, oh, yeah, she did say that. What are you reading, boo? Oh, yeah, whenever you got it wrong. He struck out three times with that. First, you called to April, and Royal told you quit putting his wife in Angel Marcus's bed. And then I said that, is this going to cause the argument podcast when we first introduced them? And then you asked, were they both comedians? And then you were asking, were they in entertainment? But it just kept going on, and it was funny. You had Royale on the floor. I just want you to know that, Will. Royale was in tears when you said
you
that.
Had a comedian on the floor.
Tiffany, EB, that was one show, okay?
One show? Oh, my God. One show. Are you want to talk about the show where you, when I talked about Kelly Price for 5 minutes, when I was giving appreciation to Rhonda Isley and the 90s, Mr. Big personality, I was giving praise for 5 minutes, and you were like, where is she ranking American Idol? And then you come back with, I thought she was talking about Kelly Clarkson. Really? For 5 minutes? You thought I was talking, and then it wasn't even that, it was that you were trying to convince me she did a song, Kelly Clarkson did a song with a black group. That's what took me out. I almost passed out in the chair when he said that.
Okay.
I was like, yes, the Childlights did a duet with Kelly Clarkson. That really happened. It's on iTunes right now on Spotify.
All right, there were two shows. Okay, all right, two. Well, they have leaks in the White House. I mean, shucks, give me a break.
And then Layla, she says, here's another time. It says, OMG, I never understood the rolling off the floor acronym until I listened to this show. During the interview, I thought I heard the guest Royale say, did you put my wife in the bed? Yeah, that's what I just said. Did you put my wife in the bed with Marcus and Angel? And you guys poking fun at your co-host. I just couldn't stop laughing. But Will Brown's commentary during the hip-hop segment about clean rap, quotation marks, had me on the floor. I had to pause to gather myself. And the gentleman who shouted out, what and how you tried to skip over him, Q-Lynn, I've never laughed so hard in my life. Keep doing what you do, Q-Lynn Boo. Thank you for that. Yeah, that whole, y'all got to listen. Y'all got to pull up social media.com. Go to the Hip-Hop Black Music Month show. and the audio on there and listen to the whole thing, you're going to be in tears. Because when I listened back to it, when you're doing radio, you got to keep the show going. And so I kept going, and then I forgot I didn't tell Jay Wiggins that he wasn't a hip-hop fan. I told Shaka, shout out to him from Rap Dad, I told him, but I didn't tell Jay Wiggins. So Jay Wiggins was really appalled that you said that, Will. He was ready to go in. I was like, hold on, let me jump in. I was like, he likes happy rap. He doesn't like gangster rap.
Okay.
Now, I'm going to have to say this, though, to be honest with you, because, you have to have me and Jay Wiggs on, because, believe it or not, and I'm a hip-hop fan, I low-key kind of agree that Will Smith needs to be considered one of the GOATs.
No, he was talking about the two of us.
See?
It was that
CQ there.
Song.
Okay, all right.
It was just the two of us. That's
Tiffany,
what he meant.
I love you already.
If he would have said Jazzy Jeff, Will Smith,
thank you, Tiffany.
Jazzy Jeff, and Fresh Prince, I would have been like, yeah. But he said just the two of us.
Well, hey, Tiffany, let's go with the first one. Thank you so much, Tiffany. Thank you, dear. I love you already. Thank you, Tiffany.
No, finish what you were saying, Tiffany. Cause that just sold everything up, didn't it? Say what you just said. Say it again.
Yeah, like when she was saying that DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince, yes, even Millennium, but just the two of us. Now I gotta hit you with that swaggy P face. Cause yeah, nah.
God, see, that's what I said. You thought you had a friend. You like that. What show was it, Martin? When he said it, you thought you had a friend, didn't you? Nope. Okay, we go. Tiffany, Eric, I think Eric knows about it. It's a thing on the show. I do Savvy News on my website, but the listeners of the show, they like when I talk about, like topical stuff. Like, I'm not gonna talk about the Kardashians though. That's not really, it is Raggedy People News. I should mention them Jenna sisters for doing that whack thing they were doing with them t-shirts. But yeah, I guess we can add them in the Raggedy People News and just glance over it. But it's a thing on the show. We do. I separate the Raggedy People News with Sad News, so I call it Raggedy People. Because that's just I feel like it's self-explanatory when I get into it. So I think the first on the list is talking about these shows. Oh my God. I always people when I see reality shows, like when it first came on, I was like really into it because it wasn't really anything on TV. But now that I have such like, it's so much diversity, like from Netflix and all these different primetime shows of series, I watch that more than reality shows now. But just on the case, you know, like how VH1 and MTV, like all the Viacom channels, they'll show like Fresh Prince Marathon or Jamie Foxx show. I watch it, and then randomly I'll fall asleep on it, and then Love and Hip Hop will be on when I wake up, and then if it's on, I just watch it. And so I started watching the reunion, and I was just like, man, I'm like a woman of the cloth, like, when I watch these shows, because it's like, wow, like, these people, did y'all watch that reunion? That was crazy watching that. It was like, the narcissism is crazy with Jocelyn Hernandez, or however she say her name. What she call herself? The Puerto Rican something?
Puerto Rican princess.
The Puerto Rican princess.
She didn't even show up. She's big. I'm like, wow. Like, this is where we come to where she feel like her notoriety is already beyond the show. Like, that's crazy.
Well, you know, she was trying to say that Mona Scott Young owed her some money, which that's why her and K. Michelle got into it, because K. Michelle was like, nah, man, she helped me watch my career. So you got to come back. So they've been going back and forth over the situation for the past couple of days.
And then what's the one on there? The rowdy one, Tommy. I kind of like her, but then she got this kind of cuckoo look sometimes, and she snark her lips up. I'm like, ooh, I feel like she's going to attack anybody in a minute. She scares me. And I feel like she only like 5'2", but she's probably the only short person I'm scared of. Cause it's like, she like one minute she crying and then she flip on you just in a matter of seconds. I'm like, wow, this girl I almost throw out she got mental illness or something like that, but it's just something ain't right with that. I'm like, cause she was just going in. I was like, Jesus Christ. And then she looked a mess. I'm like, what did she got on? She got a cockatoo on her head. I'm like, got on this green outfit.
On the Chinese bangs with the ponytail in the back too, but it wasn't a high pony, it was a low pony, so it looked like she had a helmet. I was confused on that whole ensemble myself. I was like, WTF is going on with Tommy's head? I'm with you on that.
And then it's like after this, I guess the reunion, they show Love and Hip Hop, and I saw the trailer for it, and I'm like, people, it was like some of y'all cousins on Facebook be doing too much because they were like, they saw Keisha Cole was going to be, when they announced it on there, and they were like, oh, she's messing up her brand. I'm like, how? This is like perfect for her. Like, messing up her brand was doing the show with her mama. Popping them the pipes out of her pocket. That was the crack pipes out of her pocket. That ruined her image, but it's right on brand for her. Like, I don't,
but
this is right on brand.
I thought it was messing up her brand a little bit.
Who?
I'm one of those people who thought it was messing up her brand a little bit.
What brand? Of what?
I mean, not a brand, but I feel like once you reach a certain level.
Oh, I got
in your celebrity. I felt like she was regressing back to what she was doing at the beginning of her career.
I mean, she was just selling fish plates at the BET Awards, so what's going on? Like, she just finally got a they let her take her break and get a seat filler seat up in the front. You know, got the fish plates out. You know, she's been doing it consecutively for years, and I'm still mad. I already told you, Eric, I'm already mad that y'all, like, let her flourish for the early 2000s. Like, I'm still, like, y'all let her make a whole record off.
Listen.
I'm still mad about that.
That first album was hot.
Maybe it's the second album, but she still was off key. What's the one with the love on it?
That was the first album.
She did the whole song off key. Like,
listen,
what's going on?
So, let me tell you,
the key had already left. Like, it went on the bus and it took a route.
Let
it took
me
a transfer. It wasn't, the key wasn't in that song. It left.
I don't even remember what year her album came out, but I remember having a friend, a connect on the West Coast from the Bay Area, who gave me the demo for Love 3 years before it came out. So I had already played it out. Even though everybody was like, she was off key. Yeah, but that girl really wanted love. Like, you couldn't tell.
Oh, my God.
She was singing about love. Like it
you
was
know,
it was
they didn't do a playback. They didn't do the playback of the song in her ear. I told you that they just had, you know, like, you had a headphones on and you can't hear anything and you think you're killing it. And if you record yourself, that's what she sounded like. Like, that's what they did through that whole album was, they didn't have the playback in her ear where she could hear herself. It was just straight headphones. And just,
oh, man.
She just, y'all really let that happen? I'm still mad about that.
That's the only album I know.
On the hood girl anthem, though? Y'all don't go in on the hood girl anthem?
You know what? No, because I love it. I love that whole album. That's the only Keisha Cole album I know. That's the only, you know, that's the only Keisha I know. I don't know what she did after that. I don't know what happened. I don't know how.
I might watch one episode of Love and Hip Hop, and that's it. Like, I might catch the first one just to see what Twitter's talking about. Because I love watching it when Twitter's on, because Twitter be coming with the just. I don't know how they, it must be, I don't understand, like, how they come up with these memes this fast, because they be killing me. Like, that's the only way I get on when these shows, because they be coming with them memes fast. Like, well, I tell you, in milliseconds, like it ain't even, as soon as commercial break come in, here come all the memes. I'm
here
like,
memes.
Y'all are. And it's like, and I know they gonna give it to her. I don't even know what she gonna be talking about on there, but they gonna give it to Keisha Cole on there, cause Twitter, I don't know, I think it's the beat, your favorite girl, they still bitter about that, so, you know the ones, they gonna be real petty. The Beehive members, they gonna be real petty when they come on. I didn't even see your tweets today to see what you was talking about.
You know what?
Whose face did you X out earlier? Who was that?
No, I was this morning when I woke up, I had Escape's Your Little Secret was playing on my work.
Oh, why did you do that? You had Eddie Murphy, to the listeners, he had Eddie Murphy's wedding picture with Tracy Murphy on there, and Johnny Gill was one of his best men or whatever, and he had the Escape lyric on there. What was the Escape lyric?
I like being in the same room with you and your girl. And the fact that she don't know. He really turns me on. I mean,
he
that's,
is
I love that song.
So ridiculous for that. Why did you do that? That's
I
not nice
that
to do that.
See, look. I
Why
love
did
that
you
song,
do that?
And I was on.
But you didn't have to do that. You asked everybody's picture. You had the Escape lyrics on there, My Little Secret, and you just had Eddie Murphy's, and you know what you're doing, so stop it. You try,
but
see, that's what the listeners are going to find out what you are, because I already told them about your little Beyonce tiff with her. I already told them about, I spilled the beans already, so you don't have to release all this, because y'all think I'm terrible. He is off the chain on Twitter. Go to his Twitter, at EB the number four, P-R-E-Z, and he is ridiculous on there.
Listen,
like, it'll be like somebody's birthday. It'll be like Mary J. Blige's birthday, and he'll X out, and if it's a picture with Beyonce on, he'll X her picture out and be like, happy birthday. Like, you're not right. You're not right. That is not nice to do that.
I just want everybody to, you know music the same way I know music, so.
Jesus.
You know, when I post, that song, though, was on my heart this morning, and I love the way they sing it. And that was the first, Eddie Murphy and Johnny Gill were the first people to come to mind, so I put it up.
My Little Secret. Oh, my
you
God.
Are
I'm just saying.
He does this every day, Tiffany. He does this every day on Twitter.
Tiffany, no,
every
no, no,
day.
No.
I'm not spreading. I'm telling nothing but the truth, listeners. He does this every day. Okay, more to Raggedy People news. I hope Will has it ready. You ready to go, Will?
I am ready. Okay.
Okay, the next Raggedy People news, this one is a bigger one. This is real big. Black Twitter was going crazy all this. They still going crazy over this week and last week of this. I'm not going to even try to, because I'm going to get in deep into it. So this part of it, I'm going to give him respect, and I'm going to say Dr. Umar Johnson, even though, you know, everybody, it's a controversy on it. I'm going to give him respect and say Dr. Umar Johnson. I'm going to give him that respect. Okay. He's been on Breakfast Club, I think a couple of times. So this wasn't his first time, but for some reason, some of the stuff he said was big controversy. Dr. Umar Johnson was on Breakfast Club recently, and he was basically talking about, I watched the whole clip. It's about a half hour long, maybe a little bit longer, but he's talking. What the biggest controversy was him talking about interracial couples and talking about, you know, while I watched the video, it was him and DJ Envy, they breaking down, and then they were making, I think DJ Envy and Charlamagne was doing a good job in the talking points, but what bothers me, well, I guess I can let y'all go first, and we got the clips, but I'm going to let y'all go first, and then I can break down the clips. It was the Breakfast Club and a Roland Martin, and his follow-up was the Roland Martin interview, but what was y'all take on both of those videos?
Anything other than a Chinese person?
Yeah,
I've never.
In
a Chinese restaurant.
In Brooklyn, you can.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I've seen a kosher Chinese restaurant. Like in Teaneck, it's a kosher with the Jewish people that own the Chinese. Yeah.
It's rare, though. But the question, Envy, is why is that? And that's because every culture comes to America to build an economic empire for themselves. The Chinese, East Indian, Arab, Latino, whoever comes to America comes to build a cultural empire. Everyone except African Americans. So when you travel the country, you got a Little Italy in every major city.
Right.
You got a Chinatown in every major city. You see, you even see Little Cambodia's popping up now around the United States.
Martin Luther King in every city too.
Exactly. Well, you got a Martin Luther King Jr.
street. Yeah, street.
You have a Martin Luther King Jr. street.
Right.
But there's no Africa town. There's no place in Black America you can go and find the four essential institutions needed for a community. Bank, school, supermarket, hospital. And you know why that's ironic? Last year, Black America in 2016, we spent $2 billion on Air Jordans, $4 billion on liquor and alcohol, $600 million on fast food, and we bought twice the amount of Mercedes-Benzes as white America, although white America has twice the wealth of Black folk. Mm. So the question becomes, what is it about the Mercedes-Benz that makes it so attractive to African Americans even when they can barely afford it? And it's because it's a status symbol.
That's all.
And one thing we know about oppressed people, when you can't enjoy true freedom, you surround yourself with the symbols of that freedom.
Absolutely.
And that's why the Louis bag is so important. That's why our children will kill for Air Jordans. It's not the sneaker. It's what it represents. Mm. And if I believe I'm worthless, that means I can only add value to myself by what I put on my body as opposed to what I put in it.
How do we stop that? How do we slow that down? Because since I was a kid, those symbols, I mean, when I was a kid, it wasn't a Mercedes, it was the Cadillac.
Yes.
You don't feel like that anymore, though.
I think the world
does. You've been exposed to knowledge.
I just buy what I like now, but when I was a kid, I wanted that car because it was a status symbol. I wanted those sneakers because it was a status symbol. You know what I mean? But how do we get back to the part where, you know, it's not like that?
You're going to have to re-engineer the mind. Let's go to college. We all went to college. Mm-hmm. Remember in
not
college?
Me, but one, well, not mine.
Okay.
One.
But you've been on campuses. Yeah, and you notice how fly the black undergraduate.
Okay, Q-Lynn?
Yes. Y'all go first, because I'm gonna make my point, and then we're going to go to the next clip. But what is either one of y'all, Eric or Tiffany, can go.
Tiffany, well, speak your mind.
I would say, first of all, I don't take nobody serious that pronounces Arab Arab. That's number one.
True.
Number two, this is the same dude that was on YouTube faking the funk like he was rough talking somebody and got a phone call. And then number three, you could tell he lacks research, because for him to say that there's no African-American banks is totally false.
It's totally false. I live in New York City.
Yeah, like the reality of the situation is that while there have been many that have closed, there are still about a good 11 black-owned banks that are still doing very well. I mean, a matter of fact, there was a movement that started last year or the year before where Killer Mike, Usher, and all of them had banded together to actually say, hey, let's take our money and invest in black banks, and they opened up an account in the banks in Georgia. So for him to say that there's no bank no black banks is completely false. And to me, whenever people kind of, you know, shade or try to omit facts to prove a point, that means that they really are, you know, they pull a crap. You know what I mean? Like, and Umar also, you know, this is why he gets no love, besides what I just stated. He also is the basis for a lot of the FOTEPs. Not HOTEPs,
exactly.
But FOTEPs. You know what I'm saying? Like, they come up with a whole bunch of nonsense, and then they make it seem as if you sleep because you don't believe their extremism. And to me, it's that fine line, you know, to where you're kind of, it's almost like, I don't want to say it is David Koresh, but it's almost like a David Koresh type of situation where you got people that's not willing to research, especially in this day and age where we have fake news, he's spitting fake facts. And then you got people think that they're trying to overthrow something when the reality of the situation is that he just doesn't know what he's doing, and he's basically leading a whole bunch of people to do something ignorant, which is sit there and just talk about it on Facebook and keep spewing out facts all day without actually contributing to a cause.
Right.
Eric, you go, and then I'm a get my comment on that.
I think it, you can take it all back to his quote-unquote doctorate degree. Everything this man says holds no validity at all. I think he wants to be something more than he isn't. Like my grandma used to say, and still says, you know, you got to be in every little thing. He wants to be this guy and that guy. Wait, and everything he's saying, everything he's saying is, it makes no sense. I mean, on a surface level, you know, if you are, I'm not even going to use the word woke because I hate all that, but
right.
if you don't have any knowledge of anything and you come on the internet and you Google it and all this other stuff, Twitter, and you find these people, it's like you want to believe in something. You want to, you know, find, you know, that this man is telling you the truth, or this man is telling you the truth. Nothing this man says is true. He makes good points sometimes, and I think that's just him getting lucky. But, you know, I can't take him seriously at all.
And what I'm going to do, I'm going to play these clips back to back. Y'all gave y'all pens, and I'm going to break all this down. What he said when he mentioned that clip, DJ Envy asked him, I think, two for sure, he asked him what was the solution, and he never gave one. And that one, he just basically, he's the kind of person to where he'll, like what I think I heard on last week's show I was listening to, and they were talking about how Donald Trump, how he answers questions and how he'll like briefly say what they said. He'll answer it briefly, but then he'll like switch and go to a whole different point that doesn't make any sense. And that's what he does here. In that first clip, he said, talking about black banks, that we need to, which, like you said, he makes those points, but then he diverts it, and I'm going to make my point at the end of this when we play these clips, but play the next one, Will. so I can, I'm just gonna go through and give my commentary throughout these clips. Play the next one.
Internalize. Real. For example, we had a lot of great scholars. Take my ancestor, Frederick Douglass.
Mm-hmm.
Who knew their history and still marry white women. How did that happen? Now, yes, he was an old man. I give him that. His first wife, Anna Marie Douglas, a blue, black, purple, chocolate woman with nappy hair to 50 years, who birthed all of his children. It was after she died that he married the white woman, but nonetheless, he married a white woman. Had Frederick Douglass not married that white woman, he would be undisputably the greatest black leader that ever walked on American soil. But because of that one mistake that he made. But the question again is, why did he do that?
Status.
Because guess
that
what?
That white woman was that caddy truck.
No, you know what I think it was?
What?
I think to some extent, and I can say this, he suffered some of the Barack Obama, W.E.B. Du Bois syndrome. And that is when you, sometimes when you are mixed of mixed racial ancestry, which I don't even like to talk about because 300 years ago, there was no biracial or multiracial. If your father was white or your mother was white, you were still African. See, this is a modern thing, this whole multicultural movement. You never had that. Frederick Douglass was never called biracial. He was never called multiracial. He was called the N-word like the rest of us. There was no separation until the 20th century when America realized that we can use black people against themselves by giving them a new set of identities that allows them to disidentify from each other and identify more appropriately with us. But the point I'm making is the reason Frederick was able to do that is because deep down within himself, he may have still screamed for that validation.
Now, you said mistake. People are going to be mad at you by saying he made a mistake by marrying a white woman.
Sure.
Why do you say that's a mistake? Because shouldn't it be the man fell in love with who he fell in love with?
No, because marriage is a political decision. Who you marry tells me who you are. When you marry a woman, you don't just marry her. You marry her culture. You marry her community. You marry her people. You understand? So when a black man marries a white woman, he's making several clear points and messages he's sending out to his own people, because there's no greater symbol of your loyalty to your struggle than to marry a sister who shares that struggle. Loving versus Virginia. And y'all need to see the movie. It just came out a few months ago. Mm-hmm. 1957, right about around that time, a white man named Loving from Virginia sued up to the Supreme Court for the right to marry a black woman. Up until then, several states still had anti-miscegenation law. After they struck down anti-miscegenation law across the country, 1957 or 67, somewhere within there, black men have married outside their race envy more than the men of all other races in America put together as a percentage. How do you explain that? Is love purely blind? I disagree. Love is a function of your values and your priorities. I would argue the reason black men marry white women is because they wish they were white themselves, and having the white man's prize, his queen, is a psychological symbol to myself that I am equal to him. So you can't be in love with white women and not at the same time feel inferior to white males.
You know, it's interesting. I like what you said about it. It is a political decision.
You can't
separate
love from politics. Love is the most political thing, just like we try to separate religion.
So do you feel that way if you marry Puerto Rican or Latino?
It depends. Why does it depend?
Or, you know, an Asian?
It depends on consciousness, because we know what? Cuba and Puerto Rico were the two largest slave ports up until the 1800s. The Garvey movement, the red, black, and green Garvey movement, of which I'm a member. Do you know Cuba was the most thoroughly organized Garvey island in the Caribbean? Yes. You had more chapters of the red, black, and green in Cuba and in Puerto Rico than in almost any other island.
Fidel
in the
Castro Caribbean. Loved black and brown people.
Not, no. Fidel Castro was a racist. Really? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'm gonna break down that clip real quick. What he was talking about, that's the one that caused the most controversy, and the one with the, and basically talking about interracial, and then, another part of that controversy is him, you know, it's evident of him, saying all these psychology degrees, all this other stuff, is in question. It's pretty irrelevant. We're gonna get to that when we get to the rolling clips, but for right now, the Frederick Douglass, he was basically saying that at first, he was saying he's a descendant of Frederick Douglass, and now he's saying he's an ancestor. And then on the, I didn't care too much about that. I didn't understand why that was the main concern either way. But in that particular clip right there, he's talking about Frederick Douglass. And if you listen to, I chopped it up a little bit because it wasn't, first off, it wasn't even that important, because it's the, besides my point with my dislike of him. But when he said, when he broke down in that whole clip of why you can't be with a white, or a black man can't be with a white person, or his thoughts on interracial couples. And when he says that if you're a political figure or any kind of figure promoting blackness or whatever, it's discounted because you messed with a white person. And that's basically what he said with Frederick Douglass. I think Roland Martin questioned him on it, saying that what about Harry Belafonte? What about Sidney Poitier and all this other, you know, other stuff, people that have white companionship or whatever. And he basically said, oh, I hold all them accountable as well. So all of them wrong. So basically, if you have been with anybody of a white descent or whatever, ancestor, a white woman, white man, whatever, then your blackness doesn't count. And in that clip, he goes to the extent. And then DJ Envy goes a little step further and say, what about, you know, Puerto Ricans and all this stuff? And then what lost me, and he already lost me from the beginning, but when he said, it depends, I'm like, okay, this guy right here is problematic. And I'm going to explain further, but this next clip they're going, we have some more clips. I'm going to break all this down. Play the next one, Will.
I'm hearing black people going around saying that slavery destroyed the black family. Nothing could be further from the truth. Slavery didn't destroy the black family. Do you know that we were still getting married through slavery? Mm-hmm. Jumping the broom in secret, mm-hmm. even under punishment of death. We were married during Reconstruction. We were married during civil rights. When do you begin to see the rise of the single-parented black female household? 1970. After they killed Dr. King, the United States government said we must neutralize the black power base. And they determined that the black power base was the black family. It was independent black skilled men and women who financed King, financed Mr. Garvey, financed Mr. Muhammad, financed SNCC and CORE, the Freedom Riders in the sit-in movement. So they said, if we want to crush the black struggle, we got to crush the black family. So guess what they did in 1970? King dies in 68. In 1970, they came into the black communities and deindustrialized our city centers. In 1970, they started shutting down the factories. Remember, up until the 50s and 60s, you didn't need a college degree to get a decent job. Many of us got grandparents who worked in factories their whole life and lived better lives than we're living now with 2 and 3 degrees. They could work in their same neighborhood and everybody worked for the factory. Good retirement, pension, benefits, medical. They started shutting down the factories in 1970 and then they went into the high schools and did what? Started deindustrializing the inner city high schools. Up until 1970, you could graduate from almost any school in New York, certified as a plumber, certified as an electrician, certified as a carpenter, auto body, brick mason, a welder. They took all those programs out. These are the skills that pays the bills, gentlemen. As long as you have a skill, you can always feed your family. But if all you got is college degrees, you might end up in an unemployment line. Why? Because the skills that we learn in college are not necessarily marketable to other black people. I'm a psychologist. Ain't too many black people running around looking for a psychologist to reveal all the skeletons in their closet.
Yeah, you'd rather talk to a white person.
Exactly. So they started sending us to college instead of teaching us how to work with our hands. That was the 70s. That was the economic castration of the black male. Now let's go to 1980. The CIA comes in, cocaine import agency. They drop off crack. So now the unemployed black man, who has always been a breadwinner, Envy, even in slavery, we were always the breadwinner. Up until 1970, now the crack comes. You got a decision. I can sell this crack and try to put some food on the table, or I can smoke it to deal with the fact that I'm no longer economically relevant to the black woman.
Deal with that
and
drama.
Let's be clear. The decade of the 70s was the decade of making the black man economically irrelevant to the black woman. We're the only man in America who is out-earned and out-educated by our mates. No other woman in America out-earns and out-educates their mates. And this is not the black woman's problem. I want to be clear. This was systematically done to make us irrelevant to our families. Then the 1990s come, Bill Clinton crime bill. Mm-hmm. 3 strikes and you out. Mm-hmm. Mandatory minimum wages, the Bill Clinton crime bill. Now all those unemployed black men who got caught smoking crack or selling crack now being sent off to jail. And then they also give us the ADHD so that we could dope the kids up with the same medicine that sent the father to jail. Then the year 2000 come, George Bush hits us with the what? Faith-based initiative. He finds a loophole in federal law that allows you to finance churches. So now the mega churches and the medium-sized churches in the black community, Charlemagne, are being financed by the government.
You think it's a coincidence, Envy, that you don't see no major churches involved in the miseducation movement? No major churches involved in the mass incarceration movement? Black no major matter. Churches involved in police genocide? Yeah. No major churches involved in poverty? Where is the black church in 2017 when it comes to black people issues? They're missing in action because they're being paid by the government to stay out of the struggle. And that's why it's called faith-based initiative. Your pastor is the new FBI agent.
Wow. Where you gonna tell me you gonna be tonight again?
Oh man, Dr. Umar.
Brown Memorial Baptist Church, Brooklyn, New York City. Doors open up at 4. Come on out. All children are free. It's all elders right are free. There, we're gonna talk about miseducation, right, male-female relationships, which I might want to touch on for a quick minute. We're gonna talk about the upcoming
Will. You can stop it. At that point, I played it to his little whatever it was he gets paid to do at the Baptist church. I just thought that was hella ironic after saying that you're shitting on black churches, but yet you're getting paid for one to host whatever it is the hell you're doing. And I just thought that whole sentence was ironic. And if you would have just saw my disgust on my face after he said that, he really thought he dropped something. And I can tell he practiced saying that stuff. That whole breakdown of the 70s, 80s, and 90s, I could tell he practiced that so many times, because if you saw his face after he said that about George Bush and the church and how it's the FBI and all that other shit, when he said that, you should have saw it. Just look at his face when you see that part in the video and how arrogance, the levels of arrogance in his face. It's all over his face. Just looking at him.
The funny thing is, he's coming arrogant, but he's, again, incorrect. It's like very
incorrect. It's an incomplete, perspective he has. And I wasn't even going to get into this part, because we have some more clips I was going to break down. But that, in particular, he has the trajectory of what the black family was in the 70s. We don't have time to break down that whole thing. But it's incomplete because he is saying that at that time, that's when the women's movement was going on. He's basically saying, that's what y'all don't catch for all the ones that are so pro Umar Johnson. He's indirectly saying that the women's movement was the reason why the black man, and he tries to clarify, he tries to clean it up in the video, saying that it's not the woman's fault. It was that one. He said it wasn't the woman's fault that the man couldn't provide and all that, but at that time, that's when women started to work. That's when when the men went off to war. He completely negates all of that. That's what I'm saying. He completely negates all of these facts to what made the economics the way it was. And people coming from the Vietnam War, he completely negates all of that. All of that is significant to the working man, the blue collar man there. Because a lot of those black men there couldn't get jobs. And then, and the welfare, and we keep, and that's my whole problem with him. He sees black men in certain families, impoverished families, as just poor. And if we look at the numbers here, I don't even want to go that deep into it, but he's all the way off on this. And I just understand how y'all can sit here and listen to this man, and it's incomplete. Yes, he's right in a sense, but it's all about the intent and how he says it. He's not saying this information for helpful reasons. He's saying it to be antagonizing, and he's saying it to be judgmental and criticizing. But he's not offering any suggestions. He's not offering any solutions. He's just putting out rhetoric because that's how he sees the black family. Okay, go to the next one, Will, because we got some more, and I want to get straight to the point. Go to the next one.
Two African-American attorneys, but no matter what I do, I have two of everything. I have to have one lawyer.
You have to double up. Yes, sir.
I have to make sure there's no mistakes. But
yes, sir.
We have to start employing our own.
And that's why the bank has to circumvent the church for the most important institution in our community. A black bank. If you notice white communities, the bank comes in. And then before you know it, they got the school, the hospital, the supermarket, the manufacturing industry. The bank is the center of the white community, not the church. In the black community, it's the church. And why do I have an issue with that? It has nothing to do with religion. It's politics. The church takes from us, but it doesn't give back. It's not an economic recycling engine.
I agree.
We give the black church $14 million every Sunday, Charlamagne. Mm-hmm. $14 million envy every Sunday. If you're giving the black church $14 million nationally every Sunday, how do you explain those schools? Right. How do you explain those jobs? How do you explain those hospitals? That type of money, Black America is the richest black nation on earth. There's only 9 nations above us. We're number 10. And all the other nations, none of them are black. So we're the only African population that has the ability to save itself.
We all we need.
But we choose not to do it.
All right.
Dr. Umar Johnson.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, my brother.
Okay, Q-Lin.
That whole statement right there. Okay, this is his second. This is the second time DJ Envy brought this up about a solution. He talks about banks. This is my issue with when we bring this up in terms of the community. This whole thing he does is pan-Africanism. That's what he keeps saying. He's not black. He's pan-Africanism. If everything that I hear from him and his followers is talking about how black people don't support each other, all this other rhetoric, all this other crap that doesn't make any sense. When he said that, specifically in that clip right there, talking about banks and all this stuff. Now, I've said this before. I've said that black churches, if we want the solution, I said it's in the black church, the institution. There's no reason why so much money is put into that and it's not distributed back into the community. You know how many people, how many doctors, how many lawyers, how many bankers, and all these different people are in the church, and they could, anybody that has access to wealth or whatever it is, because it's a lot of people that make a certain amount of money that goes to church, whether it's a mega church or a small church. I've made this point, but my issue with Umar Johnson, what he's trying to dress this up and that y'all have to pay attention to is that his intention isn't for a solution. His intention is to brainwash y'all and to have y'all think like him. He's a psychologist, and I'm going to break that down after we play the Roland Martin clip, but just to the point of the black church. Yes, the black church, that's the solution. We talk about in poor communities. We're talking about why we can't stop crime, all the stuff that's happening in the community. That's what the answer is. Kids only do what they see. If they see drug dealers on the corner, if they see so many other people on the corner, that's what they gravitate to. It's common sense. If there's a barbershop, if it's a salon, black owned, whatever it is that's black owned in the community, that money should be going back into the community. And when he talks about the Asians, when he talks about Middle Eastern or whoever that sets up shop and has, you know, hair salons or whatever that's Chinese, yes, their money goes back to their community. Jews do that as well. But his point of saying that of a black church is not doing what they're doing, we all have to be accountable for doing stuff in a community. It's not just one person. It was not just one leader or whatever. What he's trying to do is control the masses with groupthink. That's all he's doing. He's not offering you solutions. Yes, he's talking about the banks. And that's why I say he has an incomplete perspective, because he has an intention to control people. He's saying that, but he's not offering it to solution. DJ Envy asked him twice what the solution was to this, and he wouldn't give it. He just criticizes. You get what I'm saying? And so it's not even in the matter of him when he talks about this. And I agree with that, but he's not in the right context of saying the right things, because yes, you criticize it, but the solution is to join them. But what he's doing is making money from them by hosting whatever it is he does, these talking these sessions, these clinics that he held talking to whoever, talking to couples and talking about keeping a black man with a black woman and all this other rhetoric that he spews out. His whole intention is to get with his whole school is to get your young boys over there so he can teach them pan-Africanism, and that's all code word for is you have to do what we do, and if you don't do what we do, then you're not a real black person. That's basically what his whole school, private school. I sat there and watched the whole video. I wish I could break down all these clips to all y'all, but we're going to get to the Roland Martins in a minute, but to get to my point of, I saw a video where he's talking about that private school, and he's going on a talking point, and he's like, we raised this much money. I think it was, I don't know the specific number, don't quote me on it, but it was like $100,000 to $300,000 he raised. And he kept saying, you know what, that's all right, but I need more. And he's like, and it's a shame that y'all spend this money, much money on Jordan, but won't give me money. Basically demanding them give him more money. In that, he's not even appreciative of the donations he's getting. He's saying, you have to give me more. and he's like, you can pay for this, but you won't give me money for this. And then he goes on to say what he's going to do in the school. And what threw me off completely was, like, he was like, whenever your sons come here, they're not coming home. He's like, they don't need to come home to you because you already ruined them. Like, what is going on? Like, how do you sit there and listen to that and be like, oh, I'm going to send my son to that school? When it's obvious what his intention is. His intention is to brainwash your child. So I'm going to say this real quick. I'm going to go to the next one. In terms of the banks and all that stuff, what he's talking about. Yes, that's true in a sense. But it's not just one person that has all the money that's going to make all this happen. What he's trying to promote is basically trying to isolate black people from society, and that we don't need to operate with other ethnicities and nationalities. We need to just do our own. What's problematic about that is that how does he expect any kind of growth from that if there's no investment? Yes, there needs to be people investing money in that, but the way is not being isolated to bring in. First off, he doesn't know anything about Pan-Africanism. He was on the Roland Martin show, and they're sitting there arguing about stupid stuff. I have no idea what they were arguing about, him being a ancestor, Frederick Douglass, and why they were talking about interracial couples, when most of what he says is problematic in terms of what he does with his money and the fact that people are mad that some people are accusative of what he's doing with the money with the private schools. And I'm not even making a point on that, but the fact that he has no kind of tracking to when the school is going to get built, what kind of construction. Usually with GoFundMe accounts, he switched to a GoFundMe account for some of these, and he raised over $700,000. Usually when you have a paper trail to when the school is going to start, you have a, you know, and I know he's had some hiccups with some of the schools he's trying to get, but at the end of the day, he has no paper trail to those schools. And for people to be appalled that people want to know where their money is going is stupid to me. Like, even with your taxes, like, even with me, when I fill out, I don't even fill out W-2 forms. When I fill out my forms, I have to be accountable for every check I get. When I go do a gig, I don't even mess with none of those checks until after I pay quarterly tax payments. So when I got two separate business accounts, I have to be accountable for all that money, for every business lunch, for anything that I can write off or whatever. I have to be accountable for all the money I get in, and I have to make sure it's there. Because guess what? I'm going to go to jail if I don't. But the fact that y'all don't feel he should be accountable for something publicly he's getting donations from a private school. And I saw in one video where he said that it's not that most of his followers want him to get poor kids to the school. And he's like, well, we're not going to discriminate against the people with the parents with kids that have money as well that's privileged. I'm like, of course so, because how is he going to pay for a private school if he doesn't get those donations? You get what I'm saying? And so he's basically being manipulative, and I'm trying to figure out why y'all are not reading the signs into that. And his homophobia messages, his misogynist messages, he wraps it up into saying he wants black man and the black woman to be together, but it's all messed up. And if you really break down what he's saying, he has control over, he wants black men to have control of patriarchy over the woman. Like, you can't have European prosthetics or hair, weave. Like, he actually insulted a woman, a black woman, at his audience for having a weave. And he tried to disguise it as being funny, but he was insulting the woman because she had weave in her hair. And this is a black woman. And then it was a woman that said she was a feminist and she was a lesbian, and she called him out on his views and what he said earlier in the show. And she's sitting there, and he's being disrespectful. And that's my problem. That's why I can't believe anything he's saying, because the way, whenever anybody comes to him with information, he completely tries to spin it and say they're being disrespectful. And that's what he did to the woman that was trying to tell him about himself. And he basically flipped it and was trying to say you were being disrespectful. And she's like, if you're going to bring up the 70s book to where it says that homosexuality was a mental illness and all that stuff, then you can skip it. And that's the only reference he had, was a book from the 70s of where he gets his information from. And it's incomplete because all of this is his ideas. All of this is his ideas. These are like y'all said earlier, these aren't facts. This is his opinion. And I'm going to make my last point Once he played, it will have the queued up visual. I just have two clips, so play the first one.
Okay, sure, certainly, I have that. Q-Lynn, and I'm not sure whether you want to answer this now or answer this after the segment, but I have a comment and a question for you and the panel. I was lost. I was lost when he mentioned something about crack being imported into our neighborhoods. And he had a lot of facts about that and some things that have been done to us systematically.
Those weren't facts, Will. Those weren't facts. Those are opinions that need to be checked.
Okay, you want to hold that? Okay.
Yeah, you can hold up on that, and we can get to the clip. I can make those points after we lose. Play these two clips so we can finish up with this. Play the first one, and then I'll break that one down. Okay. This is the Roland Martin interview.
Particular interview, you talked about a variety of issues that also got people talking. One of them dealt with your views on interracial marriage.
Yes, sir.
And so, so explain that. For folks who did not hear it.
Certainly. Simply put, any black man who is with a woman who's not an African herself is going to have a difficult time getting respect from me. I believe black men need to be with black women. The black family is under attack. Only one out of every four black women gets married. The black woman is last likely to get married. She's the last married, the first divorced. We have, what, two-thirds of our children being raised by working class and impoverished single black female-led households. The destruction of a nation begins in the home of its families. And if we want to save black people, we have to save the black family.
So,
and in order to do that, black men have to commit themselves to black women.
So when you talk about not getting your respect, so if that's the case, you're saying President Barack Obama to get your respect because his dad married a white woman?
Oh, not at all.
Would Harry Belafonte?
Not at all. I want to be very clear about something. As Pan-Africanists, the product of an interracial union is an African. I have heroes who are biracial. Some of the grandfathers of Pan-Africanism were of mixed racial ancestry. You don't blame a child for how they got here.
But I'm asking you this here. Harry Belafonte has a white wife. No respect for him?
It would be very. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter your social status.
No. I didn't say social. I'm talking about the one who put the work.
Right, but you put him out.
No. I'm asking you. So, mm-hmm. Harry Belafonte.
Yes, sir.
Sidney Poitier, Julian Bond, Vernon Jordan.
And you're naming all them to say what?
No, these are all African American men who have
done some good things.
Who have married white women. But you said any black man who marries a white woman will not get your respect.
Can I respond?
Yeah, go ahead.
And what I'm telling you is this: I don't care who you name. I don't care how much work you did for black people. Your greatest commitment to black people is being committed to a black woman. It is still a contradiction. No matter how much you think you did for the struggle, if you really were concerned with black people, you would commit yourself to a black woman. So it doesn't matter how successful they are. It doesn't matter how great you may claim them to be. At the end of the day, you didn't think enough about your own people to marry a woman who looks like you.
Frederick Douglass.
Yes, sir. An ancestor of mine.
So when you say ancestor...
You can stop it right there. First off, I got the facts right here, and I already mentioned this in the, I think, one show we did I told you I was arguing with somebody on Facebook. It always starts on Facebook. Somebody talking about the black family, the black marriage is on the decline and all this other bullshit that doesn't make any sense, but we're going to get to the facts right here. It says, the census data, Census Bureau said that 75% of black women marry before they turn age 35 after examining census data from 2005 to 2009. It says black women small towns have higher marriage rates than white women in urban centers. This is from the New York and Los Angeles Times, the New York Times article. And going into, it says that the college degree, they say when they make the arguments about the college degree being the woman's default in getting married, it says that new story about black men often mentioned that more black women pursue higher education than black women by 2-to-1 ratio by some estimate. But what these pieces leave out is that the white women also earn college degrees more than white men do, and this gender imbalance hasn't hurt white women's chances at matrimony. What's more, black women who finish college actually improve their chances of marrying rather than lower than them. Among black women, 70% of college graduates are married by 40. It says only 6% of black high school graduates are married by that age. It says also in 2008, 76% of black men with a college degree married by age 40. And it says in contrast, only 63% of black men with just a high school just a high school diploma tied the knot. And also, it says rich black men. It even breaks it down from that, from ones that have $100,000 a year salary get hitched to black women at 83% rate. So when we talk about, there's this thing I say on the show, it's a thing called facts. Because he says these things, he believes them, and y'all run with it. These are facts. This isn't something, this is of the new age. This isn't from 1955. This is from the early 2000s, from the late 2000s right now. 70%, 80% black marriages, and yet it's on the decline from what Umar Johnson says. It's on the decline. That's what I'm saying. There's facts out here, and it's really bothering me, because it's like we're getting into the era of groupthink. And groupthink in terms of the presidency with Trump, with people running with stuff that's not true just because they want to believe it. There's facts out here to counter what y'all talking about. So when he says this about black marriages, I'm completely turned up, because it's not factual. It's not on the decline. For him, probably it is, because if you don't reach a certain status quo in a marriage, if you don't do this in a black marriage, if you don't do this, mind you, he's not married or he doesn't have kids, so I don't know why he's so opinionated on black families, because he's not married. For him to dispute all this nonsense, it's fucking ridiculous to me. And y'all sit here and listen to this. It's like y'all are such in, and y'all want anybody that debunks it, and I know I'm going to get the emails. I don't give a shit. Give them at, y'all been doing it ever since I've had a website, so I don't care. I don't care if y'all get mad at me. For y'all to sit here and listen to this, these videos got over a million views. For y'all to sit here, and only thing you can take from it is, oh, these are a bunch of coons on there. And in the next clip, that's where it got really heated. And this is where Umar Johnson calls one of the people on the panel a coon because he calls him a liar. So you can play the next one, Will.
People that understand race in America?
There's not a white person in America.
There's no white people understand race in America.
There's not a white person.
Them going to Eugene.
There's not a white person in America who has ever worked to systematically eliminate the white privilege that they benefit from vis-a-vis your oppression.
You're lying.
You know, 190 million people in America.
We're not going to go there. We're not. I haven't
called me a liar, and you're cool.
Well, it's a fact that you're lying. It's a fact that you're lying. It's a fact that you're lying.
I understand you.
To say that.
Everybody, one second. Several things I don't allow. I don't allow the N-word. I don't allow coon. We can talk to one another and disagree, but I do not use racial epithets against
and
black
that's
people.
That's fine, but he called
no,
me
no,
a
no,
liar.
No.
So the language
racial epithets will not be used on this show.
And that's fine.
By anybody.
But how we talk to each other.
You can say whatever you want, but no racial epithets will be used on this show about black people to black people. Eugene, your question.
So from your paradigm, from your perspective, civil rights acts isn't an act of white folk stepping up on behalf of black folk. Current criminal justice reform legislation moving isn't a current act of white folk stepping up on behalf of black folk. Folk that funded the civil rights movement in the 50s and 60s isn't an act of white folk stepping up on behalf of black folk. I'm sorry, as an American, because I define myself as an American,
sure
an African American.
I'm sure you do.
I live in a country that moves forward together. And I say that as a Republican. We move forward together. Yes, we have individual struggle. Yes, we have struggle.
I'm not talking
yes,
about
we have, yes, no, no, no. Yes, we
We're
have,
talking
we
about
have,
systematic
we have, we have systematic,
bias,
we have
proportionality.
Finish in 15 seconds.
We have systematic struggles, and together as a country, moving forward to defeat those struggles.
Really? So, based on what you said, I want you to give me examples of white folk, not individuals, but systematically.
Why can't they be individuals?
Excuse me.
Why can't they be
excuse
individuals?
Me. I know you can't wait
one
to finish.
Answer,
but
one
finish.
Second answer.
Can I finish?
Go.
Okay, I'm going. Okay? You cannot name anything systematically done ever in this country by white people to equal the playing field for black folks.
The Civil Rights Act, Congress.
Oh, wow.
That whole clip right there is why I have an issue with him, because in that whole thing, instead of him, mind you, the panelists, I agree with some in a sense that I really don't understand why the whole conversation, why Roland Martin started with the questioning if he's his degrees and all that stuff, because it's irrelevant to what his message is, because it's always going to get his followers to say that, oh, that's just them trying to keep the black man down from getting the black message and blah, 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 all that shit. That's right. All they talk about on there and create these thought points that don't make any sense. If you sit, I sit there and watch their videos, I'm like, okay, everybody in the comments, because I don't look at the views or the comments until after I watch the video. I'm like, clearly, it's going to be people that see Umar Johnson say he lost his cool. Everybody in the comments is calling everybody a coon. The people that didn't agree with Umar Johnson saying that, oh, y'all defending interracial couples, y'all want the white man, y'all want the white woman, all this stuff. And it's irrelevant to the point of what he's doing. He sit there and said in the Breakfast Club video that he's a psychologist. And let's I'm going to break that down a little bit. It says right here, psychologists study human traits, behaviors, and emotions, and then analyze these factors. It says they also observe the influence of culture, beliefs, environments, and situation on human actions, including relationships, social interactions. Psychologists employ several techniques such as hypnosis, clinical observations, and subject interviews for their studies. These studies help them understand the different personalities and behavioral aspects of people, and this understanding can help improve interactions between different people, cultures, and countries to promote better relations. He claims to be a psychologist, but y'all not understanding how that can be misinterpreted as manipulation. He's a psychologist, but he has the tool of manipulation, of manipulating the masses. That's his whole goal. That's what Pan-Africanism is for you, or whatever you say it, that you have to think like them. That's his whole message. If you sit there and listen to all of his interviews he does, if you don't agree with what he says, he calls you a coon. And yes, the guy said he's a liar and all that stuff, but he's talking about the stuff that he can't prove to be factual. And he has a point. And I wish they would have certain people on to go with him, because if they would have me on, I could easily debunk all the stuff he's saying, because I just pinpoint and ask the real questions. Why aren't y'all asking him the real questions of what his main goal is with this private school? And if that's the case, why can't he start small? Why does he have to have a private school? And I'm understanding how that doesn't register to people that it's something shifty. Not even the fact of his degrees and all that stuff. I'm saying his intention. Like, how can you not read through his intention of the fact that he, instead of getting a charter school or just a public school, anything to where you can get a money trail, private school, you're not going to get a money trail from that. So I'm trying to figure out why y'all don't understand what he's doing. And the fact that he's not giving you any kind of details on what he's doing with the school, why is that not red flags to y'all? And it's to me, I don't understand these end of the spectrum arguments of, oh, if you don't agree with Umar Johnson, then you're coon. Or if you don't agree with him, then from the other side, that you're coon as well. So it's just a bunch of rhetoric. But the point is that he claims to be a psychologist, and he's using it to be manipulative on black boys. How is that not problematic? He's the issue. His whole message is problematic. And for y'all to sit here on the internet and say, oh, if you don't marry this, if you marry that, then you're not real black. Who the hell are you to tell somebody to give an opinion? It's an opinion. It's not factual. All of this is opinion. And y'all taking it as God's word. That's what's so scary about it. And I'm calling it groupthink, because it's not just like 1,000. Like, it's millions of people that follow this dude. And it's very disturbing, because it's like, what is going on? Because all y'all do is give criticism. There's no solutions. All y'all want to do is criticize, oh, the black family isn't doing this, the black family isn't doing that. But y'all not creating. All you do is keep taking from people. He's not building stuff to where he's going to teach other people to get a trade school. He could do that. It's not that hard to do that. He has enough money and enough resources. From $700,000, you mean to tell me he can't create a trade school? It's people that got black girls code. You get what I'm saying? Afro technologies. You know what I mean? People that are actually creating stuff and building facilities for the young youth, not even just poor or whatever, just anybody that's open in that community to teach these kids things. And for him to be spewing out this rhetoric, and he doesn't have any solutions, just criticism, and his only solution is to, oh, let me build a private school to where I have your sons and brainwash them and thinking like I think. And they can only marry black. If they, and then in the Breakfast Club video, I didn't play it, but DJ Envy said, what, he said, if my son came home with a white girl, he's like, that's his choice. And then Umar Johnson, like, cut him off and said, no, you gotta teach him. He confuses discipline with control. He thinks controlling your kids is that, yeah, go ahead.
Well, one thing that, that I think that while Umar Johnson, because the questioning on him on the private schools is nothing new. He's been questioned several times. Actually, a black woman did a couple of years ago question him about the situation, and that's when he went on YouTube and attacked her based off of her questions, because she was asking the same thing that you're asking pretty much. Like, at that time, I think he had raised, I think he's like $150,000, and that's when he made that video really going in on people, talking about how we spend our money and it's not too hard, this and a third. But he had been, he's been questioned for, I know, at least the last 3 years on what he's doing with the money. The right. Two things that he does is he gives problems. He'll present the problem, which everyone knows is a problem, and he'll give those quasi solutions. Like, he'll say stuff like, you know, well, the unemployment rate is high because black people can't find a job because the economic system in the black community is terrible. And if we spend $4 billion in hearing that, because you're hearing problems, sounds like, okay, this dude knows what he's talking about. But the reality of the situation is that, as we all know, it's dogma. The problem, though, on why his following is so big is because you have a generation of people that want to belong. Like, black people
right.
nowadays are leaving the church in droves because they don't know what they want to do. We don't know because we have movies like Birth of a Nation. We have all kinds of different information that's become readily available. They're saying, okay, this was taught to us under the guise of slavery. You know what I'm saying? So this may not be something that we want to do. So black America is soul searching. So when you get a lot of people that are just trying to figure out who you are, you know what I'm saying? It's easy to kind of lead them this way, that way, and every other way. So I don't really think that it's, because we all know that he got his psychology degree is about as valid as a Trump college certificate. I mean, both of them ain't worth nothing. The thing is that he's just swaying people because he's very charismatic. He comes across as if he's very passionate, and you have people that really want to believe that there's more, even though he's just talking in circles. So that's why he's getting a platform, because the reality of the situation is, if Breakfast Club and Roland Martin and all them would quit putting him on there, he would be just mm-hmm. another Twitter or Facebook loudmouth like everybody else. You know what I mean?
Right.
He's
exactly.
getting a platform. So people need to quit like showcasing him to give him that voice, that, and then he'll go away.
You know, that's a great point, and it kind of transitions to the part two of a topic I did earlier this year. I did what does your wokeness mean? I'm going to break that down a little bit when we get off break, and then I can get y'all opinions on that. So, Will, you have next song queued up. We go to break.
All right. Hey, great conversation. You listen to the Soul Savage Show here live on The Buzz.
Sun, no matter where you run, my light will shine on you.
will shine on you.
My light will shine on you.
My light will shine on you.
Oh, Lord. Oh, it's shine. And this is Studio W The Buzz, the Soul 70 Show. Your host, Q Lynn Green, and EB, and special guest, Tiffany. Great show, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, that was a great song. That was EB's choice right there. It's called Tuxedo.
Yeah, yeah.
It was by Tuxedo Shine. I had never heard that before. I got to get up on that, on Tuxedo.
Oh, yeah. Mayor Hawthorne and Jake One, they made one of these super groups, and all of their music has been almost like a throwback to 80s funk soul music.
Yeah, that's why I played Gore Paint. I'm mad I'm late on him, because that song, the song we played earlier in the show, what is it called? What is that song called? Keeping Your, I forgot the name of the song, but Gore and Bake song, I think I heard it on Insecure or something, and, I looked it up, and I was like, yo, this song jams. This sound like the, y'all, it reminded me of Y'all Very People's,
right.
the song. And I'm like, I'm loving that they bringing that, the 80s vibe back on, in mainstream. That's pretty dope. But yeah, the topic of tonight is part two of What Does Your Wokeness Mean? And then I think the first part I just talked about I broke down our experiences of when we had that reality of, oh, this is basically the wokeness moment is like of your consciousness, I guess, of when you realize like, oh, this racism shit is real. Like that's, I think mine was like earlier on. I think mine started, but I think when I came to a realization was when I was like 19, and it was like random stuff that kept happening to me, and I kept noticing like white women like holding their purses and like getting like extra scared in the store like I was gonna like rob them or something. And I'm like, wait, I'm like so like mild mannered, like nothing like really gets under my skin like that. Like I would go from like 0 to 100 like Tammy from Love & Hip Hop, like at the crack of any kind of slight movement. So I was like, this is weird. And then it was like one time I think I was working at a restaurant, and I was ringing this lady up, and she was like, oh, you speak so well for a black person. I think that was my first time ever, like, wow, like she really said that. And it threw me off, but I was going to ask y'all. And then that's part two. I was going to talk about, like, we talk about wokeness and when we became conscious, but I talk about people. This one is like more of like people that, like, they so woke that they need to go to sleep. Like there's some people out here just like what Umar Johnson is and people that follow him, I think they sleep deprived out here. So I feel like they're just like the extremism is just too much. But I want to know, like, what was y'all, you or Tiffany's, woke moments or whatever, or just when you became conscious or aware of what was going on, and then, like, what's your opinion on, in terms of people that are like too like black, like this, like it's not necessarily too black, but it's like, damn, can you like take a break for like 5 minutes? Like if y'all get what I'm saying, but whoever want to go first, if you want to try to figure that out, I'm gonna try to wrap it up a little bit. But
well, I'm gonna say this. Uh-huh. I'm gonna say that people like Umar Johnson, they prey on people who are less intelligent or people who are gullible. So all of the rhetoric that he's spitting and, you know, this fact, quote unquote, and that fact, quote unquote, it is all a bunch of, I'm going to keep it clean, baloney.
You could say bullshit. I said it. I didn't say about 5-7 cuss words on it. Talk about that, dude.
You know,
yes, you have.
They're gonna
man.
Buy into.
Hey, no, I get kind of passionate when I start talking about this stuff.
He knows that there is a certain demographic of people who have half of the knowledge that he has, and keep in mind, he only has half of the knowledge that you should have. But he knows that there's people who have half of the knowledge that he has, and who will buy into anything he says. So for me, my level of wokeness is, when I realize that I am woke, I kind of wish everybody would just go back to sleep.
I know, right? Right.
I want everybody to go back to sleep. But it's when you kind of step outside of yourself and you realize that, and I'm going to quote my girl Erykah Badu, you don't have to believe everything you think. We've been programmed.
Yes.
I think when you realize that you have the power or have the knowledge to go ahead and educate yourself on certain things and realize that the people around you, the people who are quote unquote popular now or who are idols or whatever, are not always right. And there are certain things that they bring up and certain things that they say that should be red flags to you. One of the things that Umar Johnson said, like the first things he said, was the people tried to tell us that slavery broke up the black families, but people were still getting married. Yeah, right. People were still getting married, but they were also getting sold into slavery. Families were being separated. So anything you say from this point on is negated because you didn't even bother to research or even understand basic history. Like,
yeah, because when you're trying to paint,
but you depend
when you're trying to get your narrative and you're following that, those kind of facts and details don't matter because that's not his intention.
You depend on those people who follow you to automatically listen and be like, yeah, you're right. People were still getting married. So that's why I say they prey on people. So my level of wokeness is not defined by anybody else, and I think that's a mistake that we as a whole, not just black people, but people in general, humanity is making, is that we define our level of wokeness by what we think someone else's level of wokeness is. If they know this, then we got to know this. If they know that, then we got to know two times that. No. Read for yourself. Do your own research. Use common sense, because we all have common, well, I hope we all have common sense. And,
child,
you know,
I wish
from
we did,
then,
we all
be
did.
Able to deduce your own, you know, well, what's really going on. I think, and I know Erykah hates it now that she even started that stay woke thing, because everybody want to be woke now. Everybody on no dose, everybody on the 5-hour energy, no sleep.
Insomnia stages. They so woke.
Right.
Everybody
is an insomniac at this point. And
yeah, like on 4th of July, it's like, right. Like 4th of July, they was like, why people celebrate? I'm like, dang, can you have a chicken wing and like go like to your auntie house and chill? Like, why you gotta do all this? Like we all know this. Like,
everybody
like, can we have a chicken wing and get our beer and chill? Like, Jesus Christ.
It's the thing where everybody wants to be woke now. Just like in the 80s where everybody wanted to be popular. In the 90s, everybody wanted to be ghetto fabulous. Now everybody wants to be woke. And I think once we realize that woke ain't all love is practically, or woke is simply a distraction or a mirage of what we think we should be, then we will be making points. I mean, we'll be making it, you know, some type of progress in our quote unquote wokeness, or, you know, where we are in life and how we see the world around us and how we can progress as a whole or as a people, you know, black people, you know, specifically. But woke is just, I think woke is a state of mind, but also woke is a facade. It doesn't mean anything.
Exactly. Tiffany, what's your thoughts?
When it comes, I'm over here eating. When it comes to,
girl, me too. I got this lamb burger over here. I was trying to. I hope y'all can't tell in the when y'all listen to the audio back. Cause I'm over here killing this lamb burger right now.
Y'all are killing me.
And see, I couldn't even get my question in. See, but Tiffany,
we're gonna get it in. Ask the question again.
But ladies first, Tiffany.
Oh, what I was saying is that, as far as to answer the question that, that Q had is that, okay, so when it comes to being woke, that's something because I grew up in, a small town. So, you know, my brother and I we had the experience of being the only black kids in a white school, you know, because we lived in a predominantly white area. So, mm-hmm. you know, we had that do with things like that. So I've been kind of like on this woke tip since, you know, I was, or I don't even like to say woke. I like to say militant, to be honest.
Michael Evans, shout out.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Since I was in like fifth and sixth grade, you know what I'm saying? I'm listening to Public Enemy talking about can't trust it and whatnot. But,
yeah.
For real, and, you know, cause, but that's the thing too, though, cause, and kind of touching on something going back to what, Dr. Umar had gotten incorrect when he was saying that, you know, if you dated a white person or whatever, that you couldn't be pro-black. I think that's the most asinine statement, not just because of the simple fact of it's common sense, but because that would disqualify so many leaders. Malcolm X dated a white woman and was very transparent about it in his autobiography. Mm-hmm. Martin Luther King has been documented with dating white women. You know, I mean, there's so many prominent black figures who in their earlier days, and sometimes while they were still on the campaign trail, or civil rights trail, they dibbled and dabbled with white folks. I mean, but to say that exclusively disqualifies someone's blackness is the most retarded thing that I've ever heard. I mean, it doesn't make sense. But, and, you know, not to be putting it out there, because I know people are like, oh, you shouldn't use that. But I didn't mean it in that form to be derogatory. But going back to what I was saying in regards to myself, I do believe that people should be on a quest for knowledge as far as African-Americans specifically. We should be looking we should be researching not only our history as much as we can, because it's so much of it's been hidden from us and now it's being revealed, you know, with the inclusion of the internet and things like that. But we also need to start being on a quest for, you know, understanding laws and just, you know, what's going on around us civilly and things like that. Because, yeah, we can talk about Pan-African movement, black nationalist movement, militant movements and everything else until it blew in the face. But the reality of the situation is until we get a true grasp on how this country really works, we can't come up with a solution, because we're not gonna know how to make these laws work for us, because we don't know the laws. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Right, exactly.
When it comes to, and it's a running joke. I mean, Dave Chappelle said it 1,001 times, and it is a running joke in the black community. We'll tell each other what the consequence is legally for doing something illegal, because we know that like the back of our hand because of the experience that we have with the legal system. However, we don't know. You can find many people that don't know, you know, when's the mayoral race? When do you have to put mm-hmm. in your government? Things like that. That's the knowledge that we really need to be trying to seek out and things like that in order to lay the foundation for what we do to make the change truly happen. You know, now being on this super woke tip with them faux tips, I mean, and Dr. Umar right. and his crew, I mean, the reality of the situation is those people are what I consider from one extreme to the other. If you look at them prior to them, quote unquote, waking up, they was probably also the super, super duper saint Christians where you couldn't wear shorts. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. they went from one extreme to the other extreme.
It's an act of rebellion.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. An act of rebellion, or sometimes it's just that some people feel like that's the only way to make themselves feel like they're superior, doing well, to be their measuring stick, you know, to kind of look at other people and be like, well, this is your struggle. So, you know, I kind of take them with a grain of salt, because at the end of the day, the black Israelites and everything else, while being so anti, they're still including them. Because the one thing about the Pan-African movement is that it talks about us separating into our own communities, however, still being dependent upon America, being in America. It's not black nationalists which said, everybody black get together and F them and separate ourselves entirely. Same thing with black Israelites. You know, they talk this, you can't wear weeds, you can't do this, but then they're reading from the Bible. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like, which was proven to be man written and used during slavery. So I think whenever you can deal with those extreme type of people, it's they're the agents that they're talking about, in my opinion. Those are the real
exactly. people.
You know what I mean? Because it is, like Q said throughout this whole conversation, it is a form of control, not just with Dr. Umar, but just with everyone. It's like they want to be in control to make people think the way that they think, when the real solution to what it is that we need is free thinking, because our thinking has been controlled for so long. That's why we're in the situation we're in now. So that's my
point. Yeah, you want us to get us from white supremacy for you to have some other form of supremacist attitude of controlling black people's life. And he made this ridiculous saying that, I think he said that it's better to be screwed by a black man than be screwed by what? Like, I'd rather not be screwed at all. Like, period. Like, what does that even mean?
He's saying, in essence, he's saying, don't worry about being screwed by the other man when you can get screwed by your brother man. No, nobody screw us, and we all just be transparent and deal and have square dealings. How about that?
Right. Yep. Exactly. Will, what was the question you was asking?
Yes, I was listening to the whole, I was listening to all those clips, and something struck out to me, and I don't know, I'm sure the three of you caught it, right? And it was when this so-called Dr. Umar said something about prior to the 1970s, you know, the black population were doing good and things of that nature, and then... And he said some things that were factual.
I don't know what world he was living in.
Right. But then he said, he said that we knew how to use our hands and we knew how you had skills and things like that.
Right.
And then he said something about, then what happened? Then they start sending us to college. So
right.
I was, this kind of blew my mind.
I was like, what does that mean? Like, this is so, like, incomplete analogies. I don't understand what he'd be talking about. Like, how did he come up with that?
Yeah, I couldn't understand. It made no sense to me. Well, we're supposed to use our hands and things like that. But if you don't go to college today, if you don't get an education today, and if you can't put on your resume that you have gone to some school, you have some skills with your brain, and this is what it's all about. This is, we're in the 21st century right now. You know? And so I
guess you didn't watch that film what was it with the scientists that were taking that movie with Taraji and I guess you didn't watch that movie where they were highly educated black women science and math. That's all that era is discounted of them going to school and all that. But go ahead.
Right. And then EB made a comment. He said that, and I'm paraphrasing EB, that you took from that he's the type of guy that prey on the less educated or the vulnerable.
Right.
I'm paraphrasing you
exactly.
So much there, right? And then,
and then also,
Tiffany, I was listening to you as well, you know, and you were talking about certain things as far as the community is concerned, as far as not going out or going out to vote or participating and paying attention, participating. That's what I kind of took from your comment, you know? So I wanted the panel to kind of horn in on it a little bit because I was really confused when he said something about then we start going to college, you know? And it makes no sense at all because we want our young men educated. We want our men to, and young women also.
Hey, you know what?
Go on.
You know what, Will? It's because you have sense. That's why you're confused. Because anybody with sense, if you listen to that and then say what after that, something's wrong with you. But go ahead.
Okay. Lastly, and he is so dead wrong on so many things, right? Of course, the black community in the early 70s was infiltrated with, and it goes back to Bush and Oliver North and them infiltrating our neighborhoods with crack cocaine and things of that nature. Understand that. And we've been discriminated all our lives, but we've always been a force that always been resilient and come back, right? So I don't appreciate this guy, but the thing that I want to get at, he doesn't know his history because if you go back, then there was a Black Wall Street one time. There were businesses growing at one time. We always have been not only artists, you know, we've been also entrepreneurs. My great-grandfather and aunt and uncle, they own stores and things of that nature, right? But so what happens in the media and in the news, you only hear the bad parts about what is happening right here. And Black America happens to be, and I understand, and his figures are correct also, somewhere in the top 10 economies in the entire world. But that is not reported. And there's a reason for it, and I just want to get off the air and let the panel address that.
That was a good point, Will. Tiffany, jump in real quick. I didn't hear what you said. I think you were trying to answer that, but go ahead, Tiffany.
Yeah, what I was saying is the point that he was making as far as, like, when he was talking about the not using our hands and things like that, he's taking bits and pieces from theories and things that, you know, great leaders have said. What he's saying, mm-hmm. what the actual statement that was made in regards to that was not about us not using our hands anymore. It was talking about the incorporation of the small business and the elimination of apprenticeships. Because one thing that made the Black Wall Street thrive is that each one taught one. So it wasn't hey, I'm going to be your competition or whatever. It was more so, hey, let me go work with this person to learn the business and then eventually take it over from them once they move on. You know what I mean? So that was where that argument had stemmed from, that he was trying to incorporate to say, oh, well, that was a problem. That wasn't the small business incorporation and corporate America Corporation. That wasn't just a black white thing. That was a poor thing. They were talking about the elimination of that is what led to the increase in stress, lack of exercise, and also the degradation of small business ownership was the corporation. So that's where that came from. So he was just incorrect with that, speaking on that. And then whenever he was talking about the putting of crack cocaine into the black community, we all know that happened, just like the guns, the liquor stores, and all that stuff. We know about the fact that there was a stuff to make us, you know, there was a plant to make us be at war with ourselves. But he's also forgetting about why he's trying to make it seem like it just sporadically happened in the 80s. He's also forgetting about heroin. He's also forgetting about the fact that, you know, black people were actually poisoned by our own government with the Airman experiment with syphilis. I mean, he's forgetting about Agent Orange. Yeah. He's forgetting about all of these factors that were plagued the community way before the crack cocaine, and we survived that just fine. I think why the Reaganomics was such a big deal was because, again, it has to do with overall economics. Because whenever the economy is bad, it's really bad for people of color. Because poor white folks are going to get on by the strength of, you know, white privilege.
But the complexion for the protection.
Exactly.
My main man, Paul Mooney, said that.
Amen.
Exactly.
What did he say? The complexion for the protection and the collection?
Yep.
Exactly. That was a word.
So if anybody's going to struggle whenever we're going under, it's going to be people of color. So, yes, Reaganomics really was a bad thing with that and the incorporation of drugs and dropping up an increase in violence. That's what made us start selling crack. It didn't have nothing to do with the fact of black men couldn't get no job as no plumber. No, it had something to do with the economy itself, much like what's going on now, was in the shit. It was in the shitter. So people were losing jobs left and right. You know what I mean? Like, there was no jobs, period, at the end of the day. So what we do, we went up and they started, you know, started selling, slanging crack. And the corporation crack, to me, was the worst thing that could have ever happened to the black community, obviously. But,
right.
I mean, what I'm saying is that the degradation is no different than heroin. You know what I'm saying?
No,
heroin
is not.
We look back at crackheads and be like, damn, I don't never want to be a crackhead. But if we look at what's being incorporated back again, because this is where music plays a big part with that, in my opinion, too, is the drug culture being brought back to the forefront. Is crack's not the big thing now, but popping pills and things like that.
Yep.
And the fact that we're seeing a resurgence of heroin being used again, I'm like, heroin? But
it's all in the white community as well, but it's a resurgence of that in the white community, but a lot of people don't talk about that. They want to talk about that, but a lot of them are creating, like, safe havens for them to do it. Like, it's going to be a thing where it's going to probably be legal for them to do heroin. I could see that in the future. Because they do it so much, the heroin, for them to have people on standby for them to make sure that they don't overdose or whatever. Like, if that isn't a sign of white privilege, I don't know what it is, but we're running out of time, and I won't play this game because we didn't talk about, you know, it was just on my mind because it was popular. I mean, it was a popular topic to talk about this week, to talk about Umar Johnson. His whole rhetoric is problematic to me, and I think everything about his message and people that think like that. I feel like wokeness, like you said, I just brought it up because it's like the go-to word now, woke, and I'm kind of getting tired of it too. But just, I feel, like I said before, like, it's just a state of consciousness, and I feel like all the examples, I feel like we should all be obtaining information. But it's all about where are you getting this information from, and I feel like it shouldn't be from one source. Like, I feel like everybody should be reading all kind of, I know for me, I read all kind of different articles and magazines. Like, I read the New York Times, I read the Minnesota Tribune, Chicago newspaper, LA Times, New York Times. Like, I don't just get my sources from one information. And I feel like everybody just, oh, this is my go-to, so that's it. And I feel like people get to the point to where they, it's like a, kind of, they have like a capacity, they feel like it's a, like some sort of like capacity to knowledge. Like, you know, I became woke, so, you know, this is all I know. So if you're not at this stage, then I can't really hang with you because you don't think like me. Like, it's a lot of people that do that when they get certain information they wasn't privy to, they'll be like, oh, well, this person, but like, you just learned this information. Like, how are you that, like, I just don't understand the arrogance behind that. Cause there's some people I feel like they'll start these arguments with, like, cause I think some, whenever I start talking about, putting money back in the black community in terms of institutions like the black church, that's a real factor. And and I know the statistics behind, like, this actually working. Like, nobody ever took the initiative to do this at certain churches. But when I start saying that, they're like, oh, and I start bringing up people that actually do stuff in the community, they'd be like, oh, that's just that one. And I'm like, how is it that you think my solutions are the minority, but it shows that the majority in a statistic that it works, but your point of view is right, but mine is wrong. You know what I'm saying? It's right. Like, I don't understand people that get to, they feel like because they became woke or whatever that their knowledge is better than the next person's. And that if you don't think exactly like me, like what Umar Johnson does, if you don't think exactly like me, then you're wrong. It's like, information, like, you should be learning stuff every day. Like, life isn't a, you know, you just, oh, like, this is the only knowledge I get today, and that's it. Like, no, you're supposed to be growing and evolving every day. It's stuff I didn't know 10 years ago that I don't know. Like, it's stuff that, like, that I might be uncomfortable talking about or asking the person, like, if I encounter a transsexual and they like, oh, don't say this, don't say that, I'm not going to dismiss their point, because if that matters to them, I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to try my best not to say whatever or do this. But people that encounter people like that, they're like, well, F what you talking about, we on this. And I feel like that's what most of them that do the black nationalist or the pan-Africanism, that's what they own, and they don't care about. And I feel like that's the solution is the, I feel like, I said in the other show that I feel like everybody should be in everybody's movement. Like, whatever it is, like, if it's the immigrants, if it's LGBTQ community, if it's anything, I feel like everybody, because I feel like that's the answer to everything. Like, you can't just isolate yourself in one movement. Like, with Black Lives Matter, it was people arguing with me saying that non-black people couldn't be in Black Lives Matter. I'm like, what? Mm-hmm. Like, you really think it's going to take just black people to solve that we've been doing right. for hundreds of years, but for some reason, your idea makes more sense to do that, and they've been doing it. The civil rights movement didn't do it, but your opinion matters, and that's how they treat it. And we ran out of time. I think if we can have 5 more minutes to do the game, and then we can wrap it up, but I just wanted people to, we speak so much, people like Umar talk so much about, like, black, I feel like all he talks about is greed. And I feel like that's what started the whole slave trade was greed. If you read, I feel like everybody should read Slavery to Freedom by, the history of, the African American experience by, John Hope Franklin. And he breaks down the different countries in Africa and how wealthy they were. And that is true. But greed is the reason why the slave trade happened. Because they wasn't satisfied with that. They use religion, they use all these different things, and people think that Africa, that Christianity didn't exist in Africa, that it was brought on by the Europeans, but that's not a fact. It already existed right there. They had Islamic faith, they had all kind of faith in Africa. What the Europeans were trying to put upon the Africans was Catholicism, and people confused Catholicism with Christianity, and it's not Christianity, because they don't believe. Christianity is basically just believing in Jesus. And what the Europeans did, they used, like you said, it was man-made, but they just took those scriptures to be like, oh, you're a slave, so guess what? You're not going to receive freedom until you die. Like, that's what they told them. But what the slaves did, and that's why I don't understand why people discount the slaves, because they were smart enough to believe, you know what? I'm going to go with the Hebrew version of what they're talking about. And that's, you know, I could go all day on that, but just to make the point of greed is the whole thing that these people are on. It's like, why are you trying to preach, not saying Umar Johnson is doing black capitalism, But everybody's like black businesses. What's the point of that if the dollar isn't circulating in the community? And that's why I feel like black institutions like the church can be a help with that. But a lot of people keep disagreeing with it. So that's my point on that. I think it's a way deeper conversation, but we done ran out of time. And so we're going to play the game real quick. Eric is hip to it, but Tiffany isn't.
Hip.
This is a game called What Is Wrong With You? Basically, the premise of the game, you have to agree with my choices. It's an either-or game. You pretty much got to pick what I pick. And so it's musical questions. So I'm going to go with Tiffany first. I think I got maybe two for Eric because he's pretty good at it. But I got two good ones, but we'll go with Tiffany first.
The game is rigged.
Okay, it's either. This game is rigged. No, it's not rigged. It's a brilliant game. Okay, we'll go with Tiffany first. Okay, Teddy Pendergrass or Marvin Gaye?
Ooh, that's a good debate right there. What's the context? Am I trying to get some or not?
Hilarious. No, it's like, do you pick the music catalog? Whose catalog you want better?
Well, I'll go with Marvin.
Marvin, nothing's wrong with you on that one. Yeah, I don't think Marvin's gonna get it on with you. I think he's just gonna want that eight ball. That's what he's gonna want after that. But
Teddy ain't gonna get it on with you either.
Hilarious.
Hey, Teddy had that Eddie
Murphy
situation.
My bad.
Hilarious.
You know what?
Look, I think Cuba gonna go make us some
X's
on that Teddy
Pendergrass
picture too. Just
hilarious. Okay, the next one is hilarious. The next one is The Whispers or OJ's?
Okay, The Whispers was good, but I'm going to have to go with the OJ's because they had Backstabbers, they had For the Love of Money, but yeah, the OJ's.
Okay, I used to say what's wrong with you on that one, but I give a bonus for that one. That's a bonus one. So you could have said either or. It's some trick questions in here, so I'll throw it at you so you guys be on alert.
The game is rigged.
No, it's not, Will.
The game is rigged?
No, it's not. Okay, the next one is, this one's very specific with Michael Jackson. Off the Wall or Thriller?
Okay, listen, if Wiggs is listening to this, he probably is like, you already know because we had discussed it a thousand times. I'm going to go with Off the Wall, and here's why.
Right. You talking right though. What you mean? You don't got to explain nothing. You talking right. You get bonus for that.
People be like, Thriller had all the hits. Yes, Thriller had all the hits.
Such a Caucasian answer. He has all the sales in it. F all that. Every black person I know F with Off the Wall. If you don't F with Off the Wall, something is wrong with you.
It was his debut and he came through. That was Michael Jackson. You feel me?
What? All them hits on that album, yeah, you don't even have to follow up to that. That was the right answer. You talking right. Okay, the next one is, I want you to pay attention. What I said earlier, just pay attention. Okay, Rick James or Prince?
Oh, my God.
The game is rigged.
Tiffany, I believe in you, and I know.
Well, I'm about to cut your mic off if you don't quit saying that. It's going to get cut off. Say it one more time, and you're going to get cut off.
Prince. I'm picking Prince.
That's a trick question. You could have picked both.
Okay.
The next one is calling a big divide in the black community. This one is calling a big divide. Tyler Bell or Aretha?
I got to go with Miss Patty.
There you go. You're talking right, girl. You're talking right. Nothing is wrong with you on that one. You was talking right.
She said no.
I was about to tell you the Cayete, EB.
I got to explain.
Put it on hush-hush, EB.
Now, Aretha is the diva. But Miss Patty serves, okay? Miss Patty done took over TV.
Listen, you talking right.
You're not
a Molly.
She got the pies. She got the restaurant. You know
what I'm saying? The pies, man.
Yes. Don't try, Patty. They was all right. They was good. They might give you diabetes after you eat it, but it's all, it was good. With the chemicals in it and everything, it's still good.
Before Maxine, that was auntie. So, yes, I got to go Miss Patty.
Oh, man.
Talking right. There's three people Listen, Marcus and Angel, the last show said Patty. They was Patty all day, Eric. Listen to that show
Aretha
back.
All
I was,
day,
but,
every day.
But Miss Aretha, ah! Miss Aretha, though, Miss Aretha Queen Patty, okay? Miss Aretha will hold a grudge for 5 years, send you a fax, and mail you a letter, let you know why she don't like you.
Oh,
so,
right, that's the queen.
She mad Patty for no reason.
She Queen Patty, okay?
That's the queen.
That's the queen.
The next one, the next one, oh yeah, the next one is Brian McKnight or Babyface.
Ooh. So basically, get your ass whooped or,
Wow.
I'm
wow.
Like,
oh. Oh, wow.
I love Brian McKnight. I hope he don't hear that because I love him. And I've met him several, on several occasions. Until I ain't intimate with him. But if I was picking phones and stuff, I'm gonna have to go with Brian on this one. I'm going with Brian tonight. What? You know what? You was talking right. This is the most non-chromatic portion of the show because I was like, you're gonna ace all of this.
Guess what? I make up the rules as I go.
I wanted to say Babyface, but I would be cheating because I have more.
No, that doesn't count. You are doing so great until that point. Guess what? That was the final ruling. I make up the rules as I go. So something that I determined. This is the first time in Soul Savage Radio history somebody has lost this game. And I determined something is wrong with Tiffany Hamilton.
Tiffany, something is wrong.
We have a constellation prize. I have Keisha Cole's favorite drink for you, a 40 ounce. Whenever I see you, an Old English, I have it right for you. That's the constellation prize. It's a 40 ounce drink. Something is wrong with you. You pick Brian McKnight over Babyface. You can't win the game after that. Cause I could have sworn you were going to say Babyface.
I can't have it.
Over.
Look, it's because see, you had you ask for receipts, then I snapshot. I got a Babyface song, and then I got 1,000 Brian.
You know,
I had to be true.
You know what? I might have to get overruled. Okay, I'm gonna get some judges on this. Okay, Eric, do you think she should win the game? Will, do you think she should win the game?
Yes.
Patty over Aretha, and then she shows Brian and out on Babyface. Oh no! Oh no! You lost. Thank you for coming. Nice seeing you.
Don't
forget your coat at the coat check. Please push your waiter.
Oh, man. Overruled in the courtroom.
Let me ask a question. May I ask a question, please? Since you have gone over 11 minutes. Okay, that's okay. Because Braxton's back is coming up. So you tell your fans, okay, don't change a thing. Stay tuned to the buzz because Braxton's back. There's a replay of their show.
Y'all plug your social media in real quick, before we go.
Okay. Very cool. Very cool. So anyway, I think she should win because she only got one wrong, right?
No, she got more than one wrong.
Okay.
No, I make the rules. She got one wrong, but y'all are the judges. So Eric is on the something's wrong. I don't know.
If I got your Eddie Murphy joke though, that's a win.
You know what though? Okay, all right. You did get my Eddie Murphy Johnny Gill joke.
See.
So she got one wrong. Okay.
See, that's all I'm talking about.
Well, she can't, you can't feel.
You decided
fact,
EB, you decided fact, is something wrong with us or not?
Nah, you know what, Tiffany? You alright with me. You alright with me.
See, that's why.
Okay.
I'm gonna follow you right now.
Okay, you won by split decision. Technically this was a draw, so you didn't win. Kind of, a little, I don't know. In the boxing world, they would call it a draw. Yeah, you won. You won. Okay, I give it to you. Nothing's wrong with Tiffany Hamilton.
Oh, my goodness.
What is wrong with you, game? And if before we go, if y'all plug your social media so where people can find you on any platform you have, and if you have anything to promote, you can do that as well.
Go ahead, Tiffany.
TFFH, the writer on everything. That's TFFH, TheWriter, and that's on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. I mean, honestly, just check daily on The Source, Respect, and Grip Mag. I'm always posting articles on there. I have a couple of clients I'm working with. Polo the Pave God's coming out with his album soon. He has a couple of singles out that's on YouTube. And then also TG, he's reinventing himself, excuse me. So he's dropping a mixtape that's getting ready to release on Friday, and we've got some visuals coming up. So just stay tuned and just follow me on social media, and you'll definitely get the exclusives on everything.
All right. And, of course, I'm on everything as EB for Prez, the letter E, the letter B, the number 4, and then the letters PREZ. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Medium, whatever. You can find me, EB for Prez.
We used to do a Savvy Heathen Talk, but we didn't ran out of time. I think the only Savvy Talk is I'm so glad I'm going on vacation because I need one. I guess we went over – I guess I went over time because we're going to be on hiatus
you
for
guess?
A couple weeks because I'm going to be – I am. Listen, I've been ripping and running. That Black Music Month wore me out. If y'all understood how long it took me to get some interviews and schedule it, I need an assistant. The next thing, I'm speaking in the atmosphere that I get an assistant because I've almost had a mental breakdown. Y'all almost heard me because I have a mental breakdown on air with Will. That's why I fired him on here. He stressed me out. I was ready to light up right in the studio after that show. But that's my Savvy Heathen Talk.
Oh, my
I'm
God.
I'm going on vacation. We will be back in August.
Yes, please go on vacation.
We'll be back. You can find me on my social media at Q-Lane Green, my personal, and then Soul Savvy's page, soulsavvy.com. Y'all catch up on the shows. Will about to token on his Jack Daniels there.
Q-Lane
Thank you for
Green.
Soul Savvy's Radio.
Oh, my God. Oh, my
August.
God. Hey, stay right there. Don't
Thank
go.
You, Tiffany, for coming on. Thank you for EB for hosting with me.
Thank you, Tiffany. Thank you.
We're about to kill over in a
oh
minute.
My
he laughed
goodness.
So hard.
Oh, this has been hilarious. Hey, Q-Lynn Green. Q-Lynn.
Yes.
I love you, dear. I love you. And, you know, yes. And I want to say, EB, hey, this has been, you know what? This show is funny. This show is funny. And, Tiffany, thank you so much. Hey, this has been absolutely fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to the Soul Savvy Show here, live here on Studio W The Buzz. I've had such a great time. You guys are fantastic. Q-Lynn, a well-deserved vacation for you. Take your time, do what you have to do. But anyway, I'm looking forward to you when you get back. But in the meantime, you stay to Studio W The Buzz.
I'm not gonna cry, no darling, yeah. So much on my mind. You gotta understand, I ain't got no time for you, so I'd rather be alone. Miss your water. What you gonna do? You're well read by what's out on your thought of. I know you see the pain behind these eyes. Now I know you're caught up. Damn, I know you're caught up. Oh,
you live.
Oh, oh. Ooh, baby, you're my darling.
Hello.
I haven't recorded, so Q-Lynn, I hope to send it to you as soon as possible, okay? Hey, thank you, guest. EB, fantastic.
You see the pain behind these eyes. Now I know you're caught up. Damn, I know you're caught up. Oh.
did this to me. Oh, you set me free. I need a man.